The book of Proverbs. You can be reading through the book of Proverbs on your own chapter a day. You'll get through it once a month. Great practice for the rest of your life. I heard Billy Graham say for the last over 25 years, each month he's read Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Psalms, and Proverbs. All six books. Once a month for 25 years. That'll do something in you. But Book of Proverbs, great stuff. Now, some of you know some Proverbs. If the shoe fits, wear it. Have your cake and eat it too. You can think of them. Proverbs says, you know, he who slings mud loses ground. You know some of these things. Hebrew poetry, and these proverbs are in that form of Hebrew poetry, is different than poetry the way that we understand it. We know that Solomon, it tells us in 1 Kings, wrote over 1,000 songs, 1,005, I think. We only have one of them, and I'm glad it's his best one. It's the Song of Songs when we get there. And over 3,000 proverbs. We don't have all of them. The first 29 chapters of the book written by Solomon, then chapter 30, the sayings of Agur, and chapter 31, the sayings of Lemuel. So Solomon, the primary author that the Lord used to give us this book of Proverbs, and we're told he's the wisest man that ever lived. He sets out these proverbs in certain ways. Now, you know, to the Jew knew that wisdom was to be heard. It was contained. The Greek mind, different philosophies of the ancient world, wisdom was to be sought after. Solomon, you know, in the book of Ecclesiastes, takes the wrong road and says, hey, I filled my house with wine, with women, with bands, with, you know, apes and peacocks, and I did all this vanity of vanities, before he gets to the Song of Songs. He says that's not the way to discover. Now, the ultimate issue of all of this is man's purpose is to serve God. So the Jew knew that wisdom was contained in a place. It was to be heard. It wasn't to be sought after like it was a mystery. You know, people sometimes think the Bible's that way, that God is kind of playing hide and seek, and he's hidden stuff in there. And if you try real hard, he might let you find some of it. No, it's just written all over the book. It's there for us, direction and instruction. And Solomon lays it out for us in a few different forms as we go into this. You're used to poetry by meter and by rhyme. Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm kind of nice and so are you. You know, Mary had a little lamb, her fleece is white as snow. Everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. We don't have time for the cremation of Sam McGee, but we're used to meter and rhyme that way in poetry. Now, Eastern poetry is vastly different. It is conceptual. And instead of rhyme, concepts fit together. It's given to us in a different way. Solomon, as we go through this book of Proverbs, and I want to do this for the introduction because for several reasons. First of all, so that anybody gets the tape kind of has a way to attack this and move into it. But if we should study this for the rest of our lives, the wisdom contained in this book, and as we do, certain things help to put some of that into perspective. There are, if you turn to chapter 17, we're going to turn a little bit. Chapter 17, verse 22. This is one form of Hebrew poetry. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. You know, there's no Mary had a little lamb or fleeces white as snow, or the lamb was sure to go. There's no rhyme and meter there. That is called, it's a contrasting form of poetry. A merry heart does good like a medicine, but the other side of that is when you're bummed out, it dries out your bones. So it's contrasting. It's poetry in regards to concept laid against each other. Merry heart doeth good like a medicine. A broken spirit drieth the bones. You'll find as you go through the book of Proverbs, as you go through parts of Job and Psalms, contrasting. Sometimes it's constructive, where ideas are piled on top of each other. Like Psalm 1, blessed is the man who walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, who sitteth not in the seat of scornful, who standeth not in the way of sinners. That's constructive. One idea built on top of another instead of rhyme and meter. Blessed is the man. Well, which man is that? Who walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, who standeth not in the way of the sinners, who sits not in the seat of the scornful. And each one of them has a concept with it, to walk according to something, to stand then in the place of, and then finally to settle down in the place of. It's constructive. It's one idea being built on another. Sometimes that's what we see. Sometimes it is a couple, and chapter 16, if you'll turn there, of Proverbs. And sometimes it's a couple set with each other to communicate an idea instead of just contrasting. There are couples. The heart of the wise teacheth, I'm verse 23 and 24, chapter 16. The heart of the wise teacheth his mouth and addeth learning to his lips. Pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, healeth the bones. And then it moves on to another idea. So sometimes it is just laid out in couples. There are couples of concepts and ideas that are laid down. And then sometimes just in a single verse, there's one idea, like 16:3. It's just kind of completive, where you have one idea that's just laid out, and in and of itself, it's complete. Now, even those ideas are laid out sometimes in just what is a simple or a single proverb. And we're going to see as we go through this book of Proverbs, sometimes they are sets where there's certain ideas, 3-4 verses. Sometimes it's story form in the book of Proverbs, and sometimes sermons, 10-12 verses. So as we go into this, the first 9 chapters, wisdom and folly, is strictly sermons, long ideas coupled together. As you move from chapters 10 to 24, it is stories and singles, one-liners, just, you know, pithy single concepts, you know, the things that you'll remember and seek to put into practice. And then chapters 25 to 29 are stories, sets, and singles. And then as you move on to the last chapters by these other authors, there's stories and sermons in the end. So there are ways all of these things are laid out. But Hebrew poetry, it works in a different way. It contrasts with another idea. Sometimes it couples up with another idea. Sometimes it constructs upon the other idea. And sometimes it's just completive. Just one verse snaps a concept before your mind and places it there. And then you think about that. So as we move into this, we're going to see that we run into these different forms. So, because sometimes you read the book of Proverbs and you think, what in the world does that mean? So then you can go back and think, well, let me see, is that a single idea? Is it contrasting with something here? How is he putting this before us? The aim of the book of Proverbs, it says here, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. The aim is this, from verses 2 to 6, to know. And he describes now in 10 words what we're supposed to know. Certainly, the book of Psalms, largely devotional, some prophetic. The book of Proverbs, largely practical. Now, and I'm going to say this too as we go into it. Remember this. It isn't just relative to the mind, because it's going to take these things and make them relative to God. Because I hear this stuff all the time. Let me go through two dangers. One of them is people say, well, that's the Eastern mind. They thought, well, if you get trapped in that Eastern mind, Western mind nonsense, then it can set up a false authority where somebody's telling you, well, you really don't understand the Bible because you don't understand the Eastern mind. Therefore, let me interpret the Bible for you, because that will help you understand. And it sets up a false authority. You have the Holy Spirit. This is spiritual. It's not Western or Eastern. It is eternal. It comes from eternity, not from the East. It comes through the fingers of a writer, but it comes from eternity. So we only said this about Eastern poetry so you understand some of the forms of it as you read through, but the application is universal. The other thing is that it's just intellectual. This is not just an intellectual exercise. Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived, and he contradicted everything he wrote. He committed adultery. He was drunk. He had, you know, hundreds of wives. He gave himself to vanity. Everything he tells us not to do, he contradicted in his life. So it isn't enough just to be wise. And God will say to Solomon, your heart is not perfect toward me like the heart of your father David. Because in all of this heavenly wisdom, it's going to tell us that the heart has to be there, so there is a vertical connection. Because we can receive all kinds of instruction, we can even know what's true, but if this part of the Word of God, the vertical, is not real in our lives, that we can fail so easily, even though we know. So the book will seek to make that connection too, but it tells us here, look, the aim of the book, verse 2, is to know, first of all, wisdom. Wisdom, there's 10 words here going to kind of help us describe the book of Proverbs. Wisdom is the proper application of knowledge. And to know instruction, and that has the idea of learning, of it sticking in the mind. To perceive or to discern understanding, which means to come to a proper knowledge, to receive instruction, which is the same word we had before, but this is instruction of wisdom. It's coupled with wisdom, and wisdom's a different word here. It's from the Hebrew word, actually, that means to be bereaved, to, and what it's saying is, you know, there's wisdom, which is the application of knowledge. Then there's the instruction of wisdom that's relative to our heart sometimes when it's grieving. And there are things we will only learn through that form of wisdom. So the instruction of wisdom here is the instruction of bereavement. And sometimes in difficult circumstances in life, God can give wisdom too, as David was taken through so many years of struggle to be made the king that he was anointed to be. Justice here, to know justice down in verse 3, that is right behavior in regards to balances. And judgment is to decide by trying something. That's the idea of judgment there, almost weighing in the balances. And equity has to do with moral integrity, to give subtlety to the simple. So none of us are excluded. Subtlety to the simple, to take the man or woman who's simple and make them crafty. That's the word there, subtlety, to make them crafty. We're to be wise as serpents, but peaceable as doves. So to take the simple, who may get sucked into this world and destroyed if they just believe everything they hear, no, part of the book of Proverbs is to make them crafty, to give subtlety to the simple, and to the young man, knowledge. This is in regards to truth, this word here. And discretion, that's a thoughtful or a properly ordered life. To be discreet, to be thoughtful, to be able to order your life properly. A wise man will hear and will increase in learning. And a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. A wise man, I was going to tell us about wisdom, will hear, will increase in learning. Some feel like, well, I don't need to hear that. Look, are you wise? To understand a proverb and the interpretation of the words of the wise and their dark sayings, your translation might say riddles there, kind of gives us more of the idea there, what it's talking about. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom. The fear of the Lord is the beginning, the sum of knowledge. The fear of the Lord, and it'll tell us in chapter 8 that the fear of the Lord is to hate evil. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Not just talking about intellectual knowledge. Not talking about education. A.W. Tozier said there's two things that make a man ignorant. One is not enough education. The other one's too much education. Educated people can lack wisdom. This wisdom, this knowledge is relative to the fear of the Lord. Being in awe and reverence of God, the fear of the Lord is the beginning, the sum, the origin of knowledge. But fools despise wisdom and instruction. So right away, Solomon is saying enough that as we start reading the book, you say, well, I want to learn. Because he just said, fools despise wisdom and instruction. So you sit here and think, oh, if I don't want to hear this, I must be a fool. Okay, I'm ready. I want to learn. He's drawing the line between wisdom and folly as we head into this. My son, and we're going to hear this over and over again. So, ladies, my daughter, don't exclude yourself. Place you right in there because it's my son, not in the sense that Solomon is specifically writing to one of his sons. It's my son in the sense that Solomon is the master or the teacher and his son or his daughter is the pupil. So, of course, as we read it, it is God, our Father, speaking to us, saying to us, my child, my son, my daughter. So, my son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. They shall adorn you. Don't turn away from the instruction of your father or the law. Mothers are more legalistic. The law of your mother. Just joking there. The instruction of your father or the law of your mother. They'll adorn you. They'll beautify you. It'll be grace and wisdom for you. And the Bible, you know, we're in an age now where children dictate to their parents what's going to take place. That was unknown for millennia, for thousands of years. Now, if you don't give me what I want, I will make your life miserable. And parents surrender to that. But the truth is, if I don't get what I want, I'm going to make my own life a disaster. If I just, you know, I'm going to be spiteful. I'm going to be angry. Look, even Jesus, 12 years old, they go to the temple in Jerusalem. He remains behind talking with the doctors of the law. And Joseph and Mary realize on the way back to Nazareth that they've lost the Messiah. Panic sets in. They head back to Jerusalem and they find Jesus dialoguing with the doctors of the law. And of course, Mary probably burst in and said, do you know, young man, what your father, and, you know, embarrassing him in front of her, you know. And it says, Jesus went down to Nazareth and was subject unto them. Jesus. A junior hire who really was God. Went down to Nazareth and was subject to them. Because of the instruction of his father, knew that there was something in that that he would keep of God's law. So My son, hear the instruction of thy father, forsake not the law of thy mother, recognize the divine authority of that situation, for they shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head, chains about thy neck. Now, from verses 10 to 19, we're having now these sermons that we have in these first chapters, and this is about wisdom and folly. First, there's a warning. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If somebody's trying to get you to do something you know you shouldn't do, say no. You know that? Just say no. This is where it started, long before. Just say no. Peer pressure is a tremendous pressure in this life, on the job, in school, anywhere. If sinners entice thee, just say no, because he's going to draw a distinct line between wisdom and folly. If sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lay in wait for blood, let us lurk secretly for the innocent without a cause. Let's do this. Let's knock off a convenience store. Let's do this. Let's do that. Just talking about the way people without integrity and morals, without the Lord, without wisdom, make their way in this world. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave, and whole as those that go down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. Notice what they're looking for. We shall fill our houses with spoil. We're looking for riches and treasure. Let's do it. We get over on these guys. We get over on these guys. We can rip them off for this. They're never going to know. We get our hands on this. Then we'll be set. Cast in thy lot among us. Let us all have one purse. We're all in this together. Let's do this. We can steal from the rich and give to us, the poor. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. The instruction. My son, walk not in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. Now, parents, know your kids' friends. Rule over it. Know your children's friends. You know, raising my own kids, there were too many other homes where my kids would want to go. Christian families. They allowed their kids to watch stuff that we don't allow our kids to watch. Allow their kids to listen to stuff we don't allow our kids to listen to. Know their friends. Know who they hang around with. Know who they're spending time with. You can tell them at the beginning of the year, look, let's make this easy. If you hang around with a rascal this year, every time you come to me and ask me, I'm going to have to say no. Just save me the headache. Find godly friends, not just ones who say they're Christian, ones who demonstrate in their lives that what they believe is real. Make them your friends. As iron sharpens iron, so is a man with a company you keep. We'll get to that. I'm just jumping ahead there. So, know your kids' friends. Man, it is up to you, parents, to do that. Know your kids' friends. You know, and the sad thing is, now, and we have 12-year-olds that are talking about dating in our school. Don't take this personally, but if you have a 12-year-old and you're letting them date, you need your head examined. Don't take it personally. The women's retreats, they have art, they have all this stuff, and they find artists and get permission to blow up pictures, and they do all kinds of things. Well, this one artist who worked with them last year came, and after they blew the picture up, he took that back. But he said the small town he was from in upstate Pennsylvania, there were more pregnant girls in the elementary school than in the high school in that town. You know, this is the first generation washed with MTV, with media, with lyrics that would have been unacceptable 30 years ago. You know, I talk with kids after the service that are in the mindset, 13, 14-year-olds, of doing everything but with their girlfriend. And almost shocked, oh, you mean oral sex is wrong? Oh, you mean doing this is wrong? I thought only going all the way was wrong. Duh. That's the world we're living in. That's the world they live in. Know your kids' friends. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Something we should feel free to say to our own kids. Refrain thy foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely, now here comes a proverb, surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. Huh? So that sounds like it just came out of a fortune cookie, didn't it? What in the world does that have to do with this? Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. In other words, even a bird brain. If a bird sits there watching and watches you set the trap in front of him, he's not going to go in the trap. A bird brain has enough sense to stay out of the trap if he watches you set the trap. Here's the trap. Verse 18. They lay in wait for their own blood. He's saying, wisdom is saying this. That, you know, they're setting themselves up. They're laying a trap for themselves. Even a bird who watches a fowler set the trap is not going to go in it. They lay in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. You mean that you can warn someone and they're just going to go ahead and do it anyway? The Surgeon General says smoking cigarettes will give you cancer. Can I have a carton of those, please? They lay in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly, privately for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone that is greedy for gain, driven by greed, which taketh away the life of the owners thereof. Wisdom in contrast. Now we're going to go down to the end of the chapter and talk about wisdom in contrast to the fool. Those that are going out destroying their own lives with their own standards and how they've decided to live. It's a course that will lead to destruction. And Solomon says, but you know, the thing that's amazing is even a bird, if he watches somebody set the traps, not going to go into it. But here are these people. You speak to them, you give them warning, and you tell them this is where the end of your path ends up. And they go right on in their way. And that is where they end up. In contrast, wisdom crieth without. Now, he personifies wisdom. He presents wisdom almost as a person crying. She uttereth her voice in the streets. She cries in the chief concourse. So what he's going to do is say wisdom is out there crying out in the farmlands, in the wilderness, in the streets, in the concourse, in the marketplace. He's going to take us through all of the places the book of Proverbs will take us through. And he's saying wisdom is crying aloud. Wisdom has raised her voice. For anyone who wants to listen, there's wisdom. There's the right application of knowledge. Wisdom, and it's almost sad, it's almost as wisdom is going in all of these places seeking someone to listen, looking for a life that it might guide and lead. Wisdom crieth without, she uttereth her voice in the streets. She crieth in the chief places of the concourse and in the openings of the gates. In the city she utters her words, saying, this is what wisdom is crying, how long, ye simple ones, will you love simplicity? And the how long applies through, how long, you scorners, will you delight in their scorning? How long, fools, will you hate knowledge? How long are you just going to go on like this? Wisdom cries, turn. Turn. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit unto you. I will make known my words unto you. Obedience produces learning. Turn, God crying out through wisdom. Turn, I'll pour out my spirit unto you. Make known my words unto you. Because I have called and you refused. Well, here's the problem. I have stretched out my hand. No man has regarded. But you have set at naught my counsel, and would have none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear comes. The wisdom will stand in juxtaposition to the mess that we get ourselves in. You know, it's almost like wisdom saying, you want it, you want it, you want it. Finally takes his hands off and says, have it. But the point is, I'll be standing juxtaposed to that, laughing at the foolishness of your position, because wisdom was crying out all along. I will also laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear comes. When your fear cometh as desolation, and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call unto me, but I will not answer, because they're in a process of sowing and reaping. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For that they have hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. They would none of my counsel. They despised all of my proof. Therefore shall they eat the fruit of their own way. They are reaping what they have sown. And they will be filled with their own devices. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them. The man without wisdom, the foolish person, foolish woman, turning away from the Lord and from wisdom, it shall slay them. And the prosperity of fools shall destroy them. That's what they're saying over here. Let's get at this. If we could have only this, then we could fill our purse, then we could do, no, the things that they want are attained a different way. Verse 32 again. For the turning away of the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity of fools shall destroy them, but whoso hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely. I've got that underlined in my Bible because I need all the help I can get. Whoso hearkens, it means to stoop down and listen, to obey, unto me shall dwell safely and shall be quiet from the fear of evil. That's a good thing in the days we live in, isn't it? To dwell safely, to be quiet from the fear of evil. My son, if thou wilt receive my words and hide my commandments with thee, so that thou incline thine ear unto wisdom and incline thy heart to understanding, yea, if you cry after knowledge and lift up thy voice for understanding. Isn't it interesting? If you cry after knowledge, that's your prayer closet. This is the vertical of all of this. Lord, give me understanding. If you lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasure, then shalt thou understand the fear of the Lord, the reverence of God, and find the knowledge of God. The reason, for the Lord giveth wisdom. Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived. You read through the book of Kings, you understand, he understood photosynthesis, he understood migratory patterns of animals. You read through and see all of the things that he understood and how remarkable they were. He didn't learn them from his dad. His dad was a shepherd and a warrior. Solomon was the wisest man that ever lived. And you remember the process. He went to God and God said, ask of me, Solomon, what do you want? And he said, give me a wise and understanding heart to rule over this people. And God said, you know, Solomon, you could have asked for wisdom, riches. I mean, you could have asked for riches. You could have asked for the life of your enemies. You could have asked for all of these other things. But instead, because you've asked for this, I will grant you the things that you didn't ask for. Wealth, victory over your enemies. No, the problem is we know the story. Solomon didn't know the story. See, we think, I know how it goes. When I get alone with God, I ask for wisdom, then he gives me my enemies, he gives me riches. No, he understands what motivates too. But the point is, God granted that. I encourage you to seek him, for the Lord giveth wisdom. Out of his mouth cometh knowledge and understanding. He layeth up sound wisdom for the righteous. He is a buckler to them who walk upright. He protects. He keepeth the paths of judgment, and he preserves the way of his saints. I have that underlined too. He keepeth the paths of judgment, and I like this, he preserveth the way of his saints. Then shalt thou understand righteousness and judgment and equity, yea, every good path. If you seek the Lord, if you cry out to him, if you understand that these things are not just an intellectual exercise, they're not just on the horizontal, they are realized on the vertical, and that's when God allows us to see. We read through the Psalms, we hear the psalmist crying, teach me, Lord, incline my heart, make me to know your ways, cause me to walk in your paths. That the vertical has to be very real in all of this. Then shalt thou understand righteousness, verse 9, judgment and equity, yea, every good path. The things that we so desire, they come in a different way than worldly men seek them. When wisdom entereth into thine heart, and knowledge is pleasant unto thy soul, then discretion, you'll be discreet, shall preserve thee. When wisdom, that's the right application of knowledge, enters into your heart, and when knowledge is pleasant to you, you appreciate so much the things that God is teaching you, then you'll have a discreet life. Discretion shall preserve thee, and understanding shall keep thee. Now look, it's saying, you'll live discreetly. That will preserve you. Understanding will keep you. And now he goes through two personalities. Understanding and discretion will keep you from the proud man and from the strange woman. And they're both out there. And you need to look out for both of them. The proud man and the strange woman. To deliver thee from the way of the evil man, first it tells us, from the man that speaketh froward, is proud, who boasts, he's a braggart, who leaves the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the proudness of the wicked, the pride, whose ways are crooked and they froward in their paths. So, there are those out there. They're always laying a trip on somebody. They're bragging. They always got an angle. You know, they're salesmen. They're always trying to convince somebody else. You know, because when you're sinning, you feel better when somebody else sins with you. When you're doing something crazy, you want to make converts so you feel better about what you're doing. When I was in college, before I was saved at Colorado State University, and drinking age was 18 for 3.2 beer out there, and we started our own fraternity, I Tapakega. We made our own t-shirts, ITK. We like made them look like Greek letters, and we had our own fraternity. It was a disaster. I wasn't saved. BC. Discretion, understanding. It just seems like another life to me. Seems like another life. Will preserve you from those who would draw you in the proud. And it will do this too. It will deliver thee from the strange woman. Guys, we need help. There isn't anywhere in the Bible that warns women about men. There are plenty of places that warn men about women. We need help. Women have a certain angle, an advantage. To deliver thee from the strange woman, look, even from the stranger which flattereth with her words. You're so strong. Somebody finally noticed. You're so smart. You're so handsome. You're so gifted. You're so talented. I'd just like to listen to you. You're such a sucker.
Now look, this is the strange woman, but it's the foreign woman in a sense, and it's going to talk about the fact that she has left the guide of her youth and her God. So what it's saying is this woman knew the truth and became so distant from it that she was foreign, became foreign to the things of God and to the standards of God. And that her life, that far from the truth of God, is a life that's not satisfied by itself, but seeks then to flatter, to draw along with her those who lack wisdom. So, she flatters with her words. Wives are more honest. But wives, you can learn something from the strange woman. Because it doesn't hurt to compliment once in a while. We are simple. But we appreciate that. She knows, this strange woman, how to get your husband away from you by saying the things probably that you haven't said in a long time. Now, I don't want you to make stuff up about your husband. You know, if he's bald, you don't need to say, "I love your hair." If he's short, you don't need to say, "I love tall men." You know, I mean, you know, but look, I mean, there's something to learn here. She flatters with her words. She forsakes the guide of her youth and forgetteth the covenant of her God. So somewhere along the, you know, this is a woman who lacks wisdom, who has turned away from the instruction probably of a godly father and a godly mom. For her house inclineth unto death and her paths unto the dead. Don't go there. Don't go there. Wisdom is crying aloud in the streets. I don't know how many men over the years I've talked to who have inch by inch, increment by increment, been eroded by the flattery and attention of someone until they fall into sin. And they come in and say, "I don't know what happened. I don't know how this happened. I'd give my right arm to turn back life 1 month to have another try. My life is destroyed." Her house inclineth unto death. Her paths unto the dead. None that go in unto her return again, neither take they hold of the paths of life, that thou mayest walk in the way of good men and keep the paths of the righteous. For the upright, in the last two verses now, they're comparative, for the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect, the mature, shall remain in it. Those that are walking uprightly. Contrast, but the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and transgressors shall be rooted out of it. I don't even like the way that sounds. The wicked, no wonder the fear of the Lord is a clean thing. The wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and transgressors shall be rooted out of it. Don't be impatient. That's going to take place. In the meantime, we should pray for them. And hopefully see some of those that you're frustrated with, that grate on you, turn and be saved. Because we used to be the wicked. the unsaved, the unregenerate. And God was gracious to us and changed our lives. And the vertical changed for us everything on the horizontal. So the way of wisdom, the way of folly. We're going to hear much about strange women and alcohol and fist fighting and cheating and lying and laziness. And man, there's some great stuff in here as we go through the book of Proverbs, marriage and child raising. And I encourage you to be reading ahead. Again, if you read just a chapter a day every month for the next couple of months, you get familiar. I encourage you to read it once in one translation, then the next month read it in another translation. Just become familiar with it. And we'll have a great time as we head through the book of Proverbs. Let's have the musicians come.